afternoon. Thank you all for coming to this session. I know the free food is really why you're here, but I appreciate your attention anyway. I want to give a quick plug to the AAFP booth out in the hall. We are doing a survey around employed physicians and residents, specifically around what kind of resources you might find useful as you enter employment or as you try to transition from one job to another. We want to kind of get some insights into what's in your head about those kinds of things. So if you want to go to our booth and take our 3 or 4 question survey, we would really appreciate that. So quick booth plug from me. Okay, so let's get started. So top 10 questions around payment from this year. So first things first, let's do a little bit of level setting. First question, what is the QPP and is it going to go away? So the answer is no, it's not, but QPP is the Quality Payment Program, and it was established by the Medicare Access and CHIP Reauthorization Act of 2015. So it is about, it's almost going to be 6 years old here in April. So it's been around a while, and it was a bill that was passed in Congress in a bipartisan fashion. And if you've noticed lately, nothing bipartisan is going on in D.C. But in 2015, they actually happened to get something done together, and this is what happened. They passed MACRA, and QPP was born. So MACRA, Medicare Access and CHIP Reauthorization Act, is the law, and the law established the Quality Payment Program, or QPP. And under the QPP are these two tracks for payment, MIPS, the Merit-Based Incentive Payment System, and AAPMs are Advanced Alternative Payment Models. So that is a whole lot of acronyms. So MACRA, the law, QPP, established by the law, and then MIPS and AAPMs are the two tracks of payment that were established by QPP. So here is a roadmap that we drew to try to make this a little bit more understandable. This is QPP for Dummies. It is downloadable from our website, and it tries to break it down and make it as easy as possible. So let's take a look at the bottom road, or talk about this bottom road down here. I don't think my pointer's working. I think I'm in the tree. Okay, never mind. So the bottom road really quick. So the bottom road is MIPS. MIPS is where most people live. So MIPS is made up of 4 different categories: quality, cost, promoting interoperability, and improvement activities. Those are the 4 categories that make up MIPS that you're going to get scored on that are going to affect your payment. So the scores from those 4 categories are going to be added together, and it's going to affect your Medicare Part B payments. And I'm saying Medicare Part B payments purposefully because that is what MIPS affects. MIPS does not affect Medicare Part C payments, which is Medicare Advantage. It doesn't affect Medicare Part A, so if you're in FQHC, it doesn't affect you. It just affects Medicare Part B payments. So MIPS, 4 categories: quality, cost, promoting interoperability, and improvement activities. Quality, you have to report 6 quality measures. 1 has to be an outcome measure. You can report more than 6, but CMS is just going to score the top 6 and give you a score on those. Cost is something CMS calculates in the back end, and you don't have to report anything to them. They're going to calculate this for you. Improvement activities is basically based on patient-centered medical home. So if you are a certified patient-centered medical home, you get full credit in this category and you don't have to do anything. But basically this category is just an attestation. You go in and attest to, yes, we've been doing this activity, and you get credit. For family medicine, this is a really easy bar to get over for this category. And then promoting interoperability, our favorite category, basically it's meaningful use. They keep changing the name. It was Advancing Care Information. Now it's Promoting Interoperability. They think that if they keep changing the name, we'll think they keep changing the program, but they don't. It's still meaningful use, and it's still really complicated and difficult. The top road is the Advanced Alternative Payment Model road, and it looks really easy. It looks like it's a simple road to get to. This is what it should look like. Getting into an advanced alternative payment model is difficult because there's just not a lot of them, and they have to meet certain requirements to be advanced alternative payment models. And Here is another question. This is my question too. Are all advanced alternative payment models advanced alternative payment models? And the answer is no. And that's a lot of words. So what does all that mean? So CMS said, you can be in an advanced, or you can be in an alternative payment model. That's great. You can have arrangements with some of your private payers. Blue Cross can have some in United, and they can set up these arrangements with you. And you can, you know, decide if I meet these quality measures, then we're going to get to share some savings with you, and that's great. However, you have to meet certain criteria to be considered in our program an advanced alternative payment model, and this is the criteria that they laid out in the law in 2015. So they made it very specific what you had to do to be an advanced alternative payment model. And we were like, wow, how are we ever going to figure out what those are? And they said, yeah, it's going to be kind of complicated, so we're just going to give you a list. So here is the list, and this list changes frequently. So you can go to the website, the CMS website, and it will update the list and tell you. I'm sure this list probably is out of date since I've made the slide. What are the primary care advanced alternative payment models that are out there? So Medicare Shared Savings Programs tracks 1 plus, 2 and 3, not track 1, because it doesn't meet that nominal financial risk category that it has to meet to be an AAPM. In track 1, you just had upside risk and you didn't take downside risk. The MSSP track program changed its name, because CMS likes to change names to keep us on our toes, to Pathways to Success in July. So if you start hearing about Pathways to Success, it's really the new MSSP. Next Generation ACO, CPC Plus, and then Primary Care First. And then there's some others, but they're very regional and they're very specific, like the Vermont Medicare ACO program and things like that. Okay, question 3. How are the weights of the MIPS categories changing? So CMS has been making this progression and changing the categories of 4 different MIPS categories, changing their weights in an effort to get quality and cost to equal each other. So initially, they wanted this progression to be pretty rapid. And everybody really pushed back on that and said, we really have to slow this down because we're not ready to take on that much risk in the cost category. So it was going to take an act of Congress to do that, and so we actually got one. It was the Bipartisan Budget Act of 2018 was passed, and because of that, they were able to give the Secretary of Health and Human Services the right to change the weights of the categories in a way that made it so that they weren't going to have to be so rapidly merging together. So this is how it's happening right now. So in this year, quality is 45%, cost is 15%, and those are going to stay the same for 2020. However, they are going to increase, and by 2022, unless we get another act of Congress, which we could, but by 2022, quality and cost will both be at 30%. So right now, they're at 45 and 15. By 2022, they should be both at 30%. Promoting interoperability and improvement activities have remained the same year over year. I mean, it's been 5 years now. Improvement activities has always been 15%. Promoting interoperability has always been 25%. We don't foresee that those will change. I'm not saying they won't, but that is what they have been, and they've been pretty consistent. So how is the performance threshold changing? So these 4 categories add together, they give you a score, and what you're trying to do is get to or beat the performance threshold. And the performance threshold when the program started was at 3. So that was in 2017, the performance threshold was 3. That was the pick your pace year. So that was the year when you could just report one thing, do one thing, one measure, report something. We're going to give you 3 points and everyone's going to get 2 or over the threshold. And most people did. So then the threshold has gradually gone up. It went to 15 and now it's at 30 for this year. And next year it's going to be at 45. In 2021, what they have said they're going to do is make the threshold 60. So they are gradually increasing. By 2022, it's going to be the mean or median of the previous year's MIPS scores. So that mean or median was supposed to happen a long time ago. It was supposed to happen, I think, last year or maybe the year before. And the mean or median would have been about a 60 or a 65 that we would be trying to get to right now. And we said, you know, we're really not ready for that. And so again, back in 2018, with that bipartisan budget act that slowed down the quality and cost scores going up, they had the ability to slow down this performance threshold score as well. And they were able to slow down how far and how fast it progressed. So right now we're looking at a 30 for 2019 and a 45 for 2020, a 60 for 2021, and then the mean or median of the previous year's MIPS scores. This exceptional performance threshold is something that's separate. So everybody's going to get a performance threshold score, and then they're going to beat it or not, and that's going to adjust their Medicare Part B payments. If you hit another performance threshold, there's a separate pot of money that's available that you can get another payment adjustment added on to that first payment adjustment, but you have to hit a higher number. So in 2019, that higher number is 75. In 2020, that number is 80. In 2021, the number is 85. So that's for people that are really going above and beyond and submitting a lot of information and doing really well. Okay, so why is my payment adjustment so small in 2019? This is a question we get a lot, something everybody wants to know. So let's think back to that pick your pace year. 2017, the performance threshold was 3. You had to submit one thing and you got to a 3 and you got over the performance threshold. So your performance in 2017 is what affected your payment in 2019. Everyone that got over the performance threshold, well, it was most people. So when you look at this slide, you need to realize the people that are the negative in the negative part of this slide are the people that fund the positive part of this slide. So this is a budget neutral proposition. So you have to have a lot of people on the negative side of the payment adjustment in order to fund positive payment adjustments. So in 2017, when the performance threshold was a 3 and everyone met it or beat it, there wasn't a lot of negative money to distribute to those that needed the positive adjustments. So everybody's payment adjustment in 2019 was like a 0.7 or a 1 if you were an exceptional performer. It was very disappointing after doing all of that work. But it's because everybody beat the threshold and there wasn't a lot of negative money to distribute. So as the performance threshold goes up, more people will fall underneath it and there should be more negative money to distribute. Hopefully it's not your negative money they are distributing. So the other things to know about this is this is everyone is in the same boat here. So I always try to emphasize this is not just primary care against primary care, family medicine against family medicine. It's all MIPS eligible clinicians are working on this same continuum. So everyone that is a MIPS eligible clinician is in the same pot here, distributing money negative to positive. And the other thing I put on here is this potential for a 3x adjustment. And I only do that for completeness because it was in the law and some people like to talk about it and think that at some point they're gonna get a 21% or a 27% payment adjustment. I never think that's gonna happen, it could, but here is why they talk about it. If CMS collects so much negative money on these negative adjustments that they couldn't possibly distribute it using the numbers on the positive side to distribute it, they have the potential or they have the authority to multiply that by 3 to distribute all that money. I don't think all that money is gonna exist, but some people like to think, oh, MIPS is going to be like this windfall of adjustments, and it could get up to 27%. Well, I'm not going to hold my breath to wait to see that happen. But that's where those numbers are coming from, and if you hear someone talking about it, I just want you to be aware of where they're getting that information. Okay, question number 6. I'm employed or a resident. Does this even apply to me? And that's what everyone in this room is probably thinking right now. So, this is how you are exempt from MIPS. If you are in your first year of Medicare participation, if you are in an advanced alternative payment model and you qualify for the bonus, or if you are below the low volume threshold. And the low volume threshold means you're not seeing enough Medicare Part B patients to make this program worth your while. So you care for less than 200 Medicare Part B beneficiaries, you receive $90,000 or less in Medicare Part B payments, or you provide less than or equal to 200 covered professional services. So I'm gonna come back to this first bullet because I think in this room, this one really, really matters. Your first year of Medicare participation. So I don't even have to ask this question. When I give this lecture, I usually ask how many people in this room are residents or deal with residents? Probably most of you, yes. How many have residents that do moonlighting? So when you start moonlighting, what do you get? You get your own NPI in your own first year of Medicare participation. So in your second year of moonlighting, guess what you are? You're a MIPS eligible clinician. So if you are a second year, if you're a second year resident and you're moonlighting, it's all good. In your third year, if you're moonlighting, you're a MIPS eligible clinician. When you start your practice, you're a MIPS eligible clinician. If you're a third year moonlighting, if that's your first year, then you're not MIPS eligible, but it means when you're first year of practice, it's gonna be your first year of MIPS eligibility. Not saying moonlighting's bad. I think that, you know, we've all done it. We all needed to do it because we needed the money. My husband's sitting here on the front row. I'm like, yep. But I'm saying do it with the knowledge of what's going on and do it with, you know, really knowing what you're doing, that your Medicare eligibility starts as soon as you start moonlighting. So just make informed choices. This slide really wants you to look at it and know what's going on. I'm not even sure where to point. Okay, so the other thing to know about your MIPS score is it follows you. So when you are reporting, and probably in this room, this is probably what's happening. You're part of a group, you're employed, and someone's taking care of this program for you. I really hope that's what's happening. I hope that you are not laboring over this program in your office. Someone's taking care of this and they're reporting this and you're getting a MIPS score at the group level. So what happens is when you report as a group, everyone in the group gets the same score, but it's applied down to you at your NPI level. So everyone has an NPI number that identifies you as a provider and you get a score attached to that number. And that score stays with you. So if I am working in this clinic this year and I decide that I want to work over here next year, that's great. However, in 2 years, whatever score I earned over there is going to adjust my payments 2 years from now. I can't walk away from a bad MIPS score. So whatever score I earn in 2019 is going to adjust my payments in 2021. Regardless of where I work, because it's my score and it's attached to my NPI number. So it's not attached to my practice, it's not attached to my physical location. I can't leave it and walk away. It's coming with me and it's gonna adjust my payments wherever I work. Now, let's look at the flip side of that coin. Let's say that you are someone who is hiring in someone to come to your practice. Guess what they're bringing with them? They're bringing with them their MIPS score. And in 2 years, it's gonna adjust their payments. And maybe you wanna know what that is. Maybe you don't, I don't know. But it's out there, it's on Physician Compare, and you can find out. And the other thing you can think about too is if you're looking for a place to work, you can evaluate practice A or practice B. You can look up their MIPS score and see which practice may be doing better in this program. And you can find all this information on Physician Compare. It's publicly available. Okay, question number 7. What is this CMS Primary Cares Initiative we've been hearing about? So the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation put out a new payment model. It was called Primary Care First. It just came out in the last few weeks. And it is basically a progression from CPC Plus. And they included a model for seriously ill patients. They also had a direct contracting arm, so they had this primary care first arm, they had this direct contracting arm. Primary care first was more for the practices, direct contracting, really not designed for small practices, more for really large health systems or payers. If you don't live in one of these highlighted regions, it's not for you anyway, which was really disappointing. But it's out there, and if you are in CPC Plus, however, you are not eligible to apply this first year, and it's not going to start until 2021. So if you want to know more about Primary Care First, or if you are interested in that program, you can come to our booth and talk to us more about it. This is a really interesting question. That's why I gave it two numbers. What is happening with all of the E&M codes? There's a lot of rumors about this. So this is a really brief update, and I am absolutely not the expert. Erin Solis, are you in the room? Did she skip lunch? Oh, there she is. Wave your hand higher. Okay. She would be the expert to talk to about this. She will be at our booth. But I'm going to give you a very brief update. So there was this rumor that there was going to be a code collapse, and that they were going to take all of our 9921 series, 99211, 212, 345, and collapse it down and give us one code. That didn't happen. So that's not happening. However, there is only going to be four 99202 to 205s. They got rid of 99201. In 2021, so not 2020, 2021, you are going to be able to base your level of service based on either time or medical decision making, and that is physician time spent on date of service, not staff time, physician time spent on date of service. And then CMS has developed a new primary care add-on code that's going to be a G code that you can add on. This is, again, 2021, that you can add on to every visit that is going to increase your payment. And this was specifically made for primary care. And they said basically, you know, it should be, probably could and should be added on to every primary care visit. And that should increase the payment to primary care. These are the unknowns. Private payers have not committed to this change, so we're going to be working on that. And again, it doesn't take effect until 2021. Okay, what resources are available? Again, Erin Solis is going to be at the booth if you want to talk to her about that. This is something I would encourage you to do. This is the QPP website, qpp.cms.gov. CMS, again, I've said this every time I think I've given this lecture. CMS does a lot of crazy stuff. Their website on QPP is actually not bad. One of the things that you can and should do is go to their website and click on check your participation status, enter your NPI number, and it will tell you how they think you are participating in this program. Really eye-opening. Usually just about one person at every lecture is like, wow, they have me at my office from 10 years ago and I don't work there anymore. And you have to give them a call and have it fixed. So you really need to put in your NPI number and make sure that CMS is thinking you are where you actually are. And then this is the MIPS playbook. So every year since 2017, Erin and I have put together a MIPS playbook to help walk you and your office staff through reporting for MIPS. And this is free for members, and it's something that I really hope what you do is take it, download it, and then hand it to the person that's doing this program in your office. It's meant for you as a resource to understand the program, but then to hand to someone that's hopefully doing this work for you and to help walk them through step by step how to make this program implementable and as easy as possible to make sure you don't miss anything. And free to AAFP members.